I wasn't hurting as much as the lads who were out there, but I definitely felt it, and I know how hard the boys have taken that. Be disappointed with the account that we put out, but we've got another week to get back on the horse, you know, and take that horse to the water. And you can ask that horse, you can say, "Hey, horsey, do you want to have a drink, or do you want to swim?" Yeah, and it's up to that horse to then realise what he wants to do in his life. And that horse at the moment wants to go out on Saturday. He wants to clippity-clop all the way to the stoop. And he wants to say hello to those fans. And he goes, "I'm sorry about the result last week, but I'm going to give a better performance here at home against Bath." He's a slightly Irish horse. So we're looking forward to, like I say, getting back on that horse.
And are you looking forward to getting back on the horse 6 months since we last saw you?
I don't like horses. I can't ride.
TBTL!
I'm hip. I surf the web. I text. LOL. Laugh out loud. OMG. Oh my God. WTF. Why the face?
The beginning is horrible. Also the middle. So I'll give it a 4.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
They say, you snooze, you lose. But we snossed. And look what we lost.
Uh-oh. He's starting that funny talk again.
All right, here we go. Hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, a show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
And I'm going to get all anecdotal on you.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Beautiful Tuesday morning. Blue skies. It's going to be light for at least 3 more hours, so that's going to be pretty amazing. I think they call it, there's actually a term for it here in the Northwest that's been coined in the last few years, and maybe the big dark, something about the kind of what happens when we fall back on the old clocks, and it starts getting dark at like 4 p.m. here in the Northwest. I just had that moment last night. Andrew was mentioning it the other day on the show, that feeling of like, it's 4 o'clock and you're going to do something. And I keep thinking like, oh my God, I can't, like, I haven't gotten fixins for dinner. I have all this work to do. I need to hit the hay. It must be like 11 p.m. And you just look at the clock radio. It's like 4:02 p.m. And it's psychologically damaging. I'm not going to lie to you. So anyway, I'm going to try to kind of push that out of my mind, the fact that this beautiful morning will last for a limited number of hours before it's once again the big dark, and tell you about the big 3040, also known as episode 3040, in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Where we have arrived on this Tuesday. There was an interview, a local TV interview, with one Papa John Schnatter. I think I've been saying his name wrong because the newscaster says the name slightly differently. We'll learn how to pronounce it because this is one of the more amazing local TV news interviews I've seen in a while. There's some real dazzling deets from one Papa John himself. Of course, he's been ousted from his company for saying the N-word, which seems like a pretty good reason to oust somebody from a company. But he says some kind of amazing things. But the newscaster, the reporter, is just bringing his absolute A game when it comes to terrible local news television wordplay.
It was the controversy that ousted the Papa of Pizza.
So we'll play you this interview. It's a delightful audio tape that you're going to want to look forward to. Speaking of foodstuffs, I went out yesterday and I spent, I don't know, I'm going to say about $80 on fake turkey products.
How about some meat? You like turkey?
Who you calling turkey?
Because I'm trying to do an experiment tonight.
Let the great experiment begin.
Where I'm gonna put the 3 or 4 leading fake turkey products up against each other, and see which one is the best. And then I'm going to buy another helping of that and take it out to the Burbank family homestead in Silverdale, Washington on Thursday, so that I can have my fake turkey while everybody else is eating their real turkey. The internet has a lot of opinions about which one I should go with, and so we will talk about that too coming up. And we will talk to this guy, longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's an activist and house party enthusiast. He's also a proud boy, emphasis on the boy, so that you don't get the wrong impression of him. He is, of course,
Ziggle Zagget. Let's get back at it.
Known as Mr.
Unlimited.
He is Andrew Walsh. He's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Lordy, lordy. Look who's 3,040. Been sitting on that since you mentioned the show number about 2 or 3 minutes ago. Sometimes I do that. When you come up with the perfectly crafted quip,
right.
You got it. Yep. And I'm not talking about the quip toothbrush, which everybody knows is perfectly crafted. Perfect. And I think you use a promo code TBTL or maybe get quip slash TBTL. It's in the details.
Slash Chompers.
McGee slash Chompers McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just felt like I could sit on that and then deploy it perfectly at the top of the show, getting us off to a nice smooth start here.
Sometimes I do that when I'm doing wait. And I actually, it's funny because I resent it in other analysts.
And co-bros.
I mean, there's really only two panelists that actually, really, there's only one panelist that I've worked with extensively who will do this where, like, I can tell that they had a line kind of like that, that they had a quip that they were really ready to deploy, but then the conversation moved on or it got away from that topic, and then the person will say, well, a couple minutes ago when we were talking about the North Korean missile test, and then I'm just like, don't wedge that in. And then I've noticed it a couple times of late when I've been on a show and I've had what I thought was a pretty good spoof. I've been very tempted as the conversation rolled on to be like, well, remember a couple minutes ago? And then, but I think I mostly am able to stifle that urge because I've seen how much it doesn't tend to work out for the other people. But yeah, no, I know the feeling. And in this case, I think it worked great. So I totally support you coming in hot with that.
So would you say I was just pulling a P.J. O'Rourke? Is that...
I'll never break.
Was I pulling an Adam Felber? Come on, crack.
I don't think P.J. O'Rourke even knows he's doing Wait. I think he doesn't care, which I kind of admire about him.
Has he been on it? Like, I pulled that because I figured he hasn't been on in forever, but I guess I don't catch a lot of the shows.
I haven't been on with him, but I don't, to be honest with you, keep great track of the show when I'm not on it. And frankly, when I'm on it, I don't keep great track of it. But what I got to love about PJ is that he is, you know, comparatively speaking, the one of the lone conservatives and on that panel. And so he, you know, he comes in for a certain amount of ribbing from the live crowd sometimes. And he just doesn't care. He's just very, like, I kind of admire that. The experience I had with him many years ago was I filled in for Peter Sagal at the last second for this gig in Michigan. That was supposed to be kind of like wait, but minus the game, but with some of the famous people from the show.
Oh, right.
Peter
had a
family thing come. So in other words, they weren't going to play any games. It was like Mo and PJ and Peter. And everybody turned out in Midland, Michigan, home of the Dow Chemical Corporation. And Peter had a family emergency, couldn't go. They called me, said, could you be in Midland, Michigan like tomorrow? And they said, it's $10,000. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that part of the story.
No, but I was like,
I will be on Midland Mars if you need me tomorrow for $10,000. I was like, this is, people are making this amount of money to do things like this. So they fly me out there. As I joked with the crowd, and as I've probably relayed on this show many times, my quip to the quip is making a lot of appearances.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My eight sleep to the audience in that room was I was like, I knew that they were bummed that it wasn't Peter Sagal. Of course they were. Like, what? I mean, he's arguably one of the biggest stars on the show, other than maybe Paula. Like, that's the only person who would have had it been okay for it to not be Peter. But it wasn't. It was me. I walked out and I said, well, I know you guys are bummed, but this is actually a big night for me because on my bucket list has always been to see 4,000 people disappointed at the same moment. And I'm getting that right now.
That's pretty good.
I thought that was a decent spoof.
That's a pretty good eight sleep. How did the crowd react?
Yeah. I consider it more of an Everlane.
Yeah.
But, So
that's a pretty good honey book.
Everybody was lovely. Everybody was very nice, but they were I could just imagine how let down they were that it wasn't the famous guy from the show. But anyway, after that, PJ O'Rourke and I are in Midland, Michigan, of all places, and we end up just sitting outside of this bar kind of by ourselves at this little table chatting. And I had, like, never talked to him for more than 5 minutes in my life, and I found him to be a quite delightful person to talk to, politics aside. So that's my way of saying, yes, it was PJ O'Rourke who wanted to shoehorn his jokes in. But they were always about small government, which I thought was weird.
Oh, sure. Well, they have to be small government jokes if you're going to shoehorn them in. I know I've told the story a million times of how I knew PJ from working at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Oh, right. Wait, of course.
Used to be, you know, not live in front of an audience so much as, like, the panelists would be spread out across the country at various radio studios. They'd all hook them up via ISDN, and it was more of a studio show, and Peter would be in Chicago. Often PJ, he was much more regular back then. I assume he, I don't know if it was his diet or what it was, but he was much more regular and much more of a regular guest on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I think it's okay for me to say this.
Do you remember that time? Wasn't it weird, that phase? Because I remember that phase of that show, because I worked in L.A. on Day to Day, and like Sue Ellicott would come in and Paula would come in to use NPR West. Oh, okay. Then it was nuts. One time they used Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, I'm sitting here in Nashville at the little studio.
That was a failed experiment.
Wow, you were trying to, you were trying to sit on a Zazzle and just lay that Zazzle on me, weren't you?
Wow,
I consider more of an earnest.
Okay, let me try to finish this, only because I know I've told this too many times, but this time I'm going to try to add a little something extra, a little lagniappe at the end that I hope it's okay to say. But so I would sit there and I would engineer, in other words, just make sure that. That our studio was hooked up to the proper studio in Chicago, that everybody could hear PJ, that PJ could hear everybody, and then I would just babysit the board. I'd sit on the other side of the glass, make sure everything went fine. But what I would do, and I've admitted this on the show before, probably breaking many laws, is I would record my own copies of the unedited Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I had a bunch of these on those generic white cheap-ass cassette tapes that used to be the standard in a lot of public radio studios, and I had a whole bunch of these. And I would label them with a date, and I would start recording immediately, because I always thought some of the funniest stuff was the stuff that people were joshing about as they were waiting for the other panelists to show up, and it was off-air. And I understand, like, as somebody who speaks into microphones now, I understand how off-putting that would be to these people to know that I was making secret recordings of them. And again, probably illegal, but it was purely out of fandom, and I never did anything public with them. It was just for my own.
Do you know that I've been recording these conversations that you and I haven't put them on the internet?
Oh, no. How? Not all 3,040. Lordy, lordy. But anyway, I don't even know if I ever went back and listened to them. I just liked having them. They're long gone now. I promise you I did nothing bad with them. But I will say this, and one of the things that made me laugh so hard was PJ came in and he's like talking to the panelists. He's like, God, I just drove in and I was just listening to an interview with Diane Rehm and Mr. Rogers. He's like, they're both good people, but like it was like a competition to see who could talk slower. Like, I always think of that. I always want to go back and find that conversation and slow it down even more. And he said that, like, he wasn't being mean-spirited either. He was just astounded at the pace of this conversation.
Honestly, that kind of stuff is kind of nice sometimes, because you and I – well, it's funny – I always say, like, we still kind of work in public radio. And it's like, no, we legitimately work in public radio. This is a public radio show, despite, how little we conform to the standards of public radio typically. But it's kind of nice sometimes to have a little dose of that perspective, because we work in this all the time. And we, I think, both appreciate it for all of its flaws and quirks. And we both, like, geek out about it in a certain way, and then it starts to feel like it's a really important thing. And then it's like why it's been kind of great to grow up in a family and to have many friends who couldn't find a public radio station on the dial if you put it on that station and broke the knob off.
Yeah,
and like that's really good. Like it's good that for me, not, you know what I mean, just to kind of get some perspective on how overly precious this whole thing can be sometimes, because like as I famously talk about, my family in Philadelphia will legit ask me, are you still DJing, when I see them at events. It's like, that's just good, because it reminds me of really where this work falls in the list of sort of important things. And PJ being one person who's not just like drinking the Kool-Aid so hard.
Right.
It's kind of nice, actually.
Yeah.
It's a nice little dose of that. Hey, are you? I just want to ask real quick before we go to the break here, but did they pick up your garbage yesterday?
Which follow-up.
Had not been dealt with, much to your chagrin, although you were happy that you had tweeted out the picture of the garbage, which you just kind of started doing sort of out of habit, even though it seemed unnecessary once they started picking it up with more regularity. But you did it just because, what did you say yesterday? Err on the side of kookiness? And that ended
is
up
that
being,
how that ended up being the show title? I couldn't remember what the origin of that little phrase was.
I believe so.
Well, yes. And going back to that photo thing, and me taking a photo and tweeting it out every single week and airing on the side of kookiness, I will say that really speaks to what bothers me most about this whole thing. Not the crime, but the cover-up. Not the skipping of picking up and emptying our garbage can. But then when we tell you, the city, that they skipped us again, and they would just say, yep, the notes here say it wasn't out to the curb. Like, this constant throwing it back in our face because they're just lying. That's just what
the
they
fact
say
that,
to
freaking
everybody.
The fact that Devin Nunes kept saying, let's get back to the facts. About Andrew's garbage. That
right.
I honestly, that's frustrating. I can
it's
even
really
admit
frustrating.
That.
Exactly.
It not being my garbage.
Yeah. I was going to try to make a joke about being able to hear the garbage collector's cell phone. I don't know. I'll go back. What I'm going to do is I'll go back and I'll insert. Can we just pause for a second here?
Yep.
Okay, good. In post, I'll add a really funny quip. Or, shit, I didn't even mean to.
An ethos?
I didn't even mean to. What's happening to us? By the way, do you know how disproportionate, I'm dragging this out, I realize, but do you have any idea how disproportionate the Z's are in the list of sponsors we've had on the show? So I have, as you would guess, a folder on my desktop.
Sure.
Can I try to name them from memory? That has a folder for every client, every advertising client we've ever had, okay? And there are two, three, four, five Z's, which is very disproportionate when you think about the alphabet. Well, I guess there's always one letter. There's one letter, one vote in the alphabet, but usually not these many words in the English language begin with Z. So
go. It speaks to a certain kind of naming style of companies that is, you know, somewhat de rigueur. Okay, so I'll start
three
with the
of them are
one.
Rolling now, I believe.
Okay. Zazzle.
Zazzle, yes.
Okay. Ziggle.
Nope.
Zagat.
Nope. Although, wait,
okay, I'm out
I
of
have
ideas.
Something on my computer. No, I have something called Snagit on my computer, which is a which is a software that I'll screen grab for
What are
you.
The other four?
You don't know, really? So you got Zazzle?
Yep. I got
Zapier.
Zapier, which I always want to call Zapier. But
yep,
Zapier,
Zapier
will make you happier.
Exactly how I remember. So Zapier, Zazzle, Zebra. Yep.
Oh, sure, Zebra, the insurance folks. Mm-hmm. I see commercials for them, and I know that they're on our show.
Zola, which is relatively new.
Yeah.
That's a
new wedding planning.
Yep, exactly. And the last one, I'm not surprised you didn't get because it's been a long, long time.
And I'm just out of ideas here.
It hasn't been since 2017 that we did one for ZipRecruiter. Remember old ZipRecruiter? Yes. Somehow we weren't bringing in tons of. Apparently, we don't have a huge portion of our audience that is looking to hire right now. Apparently,
I once tweeted out a picture of just like Rudy Giuliani. By the way, amazing piece by Olivia Nuzzi in New York Magazine about the whole what it's like to have Rudy Giuliani's cell phone number and to try to get statements from him about the news.
Yeah.
It's a really remarkable piece. Would recommend.
Oh, man. That's a good recommendation.
It's like – and then she goes around interviewing all these other people kind of anonymously who are other reporters who have his number, because the scoop with him is that he is, you know, for considering he's in kind of at the center of one of the biggest political scandals in our nation's history, certainly recent history – he's remarkably forthcoming, almost to a fault. If you catch him after a couple of drinks, but before a couple more drinks, and I mean, it's a whole. The list of times that he has butt dialed reporters, accidentally sent his password to people. He does this thing where he likes, because you know you don't have an Apple phone, Andrew, but mm-hmm. but I'm sure you're aware of the fact that like if you sent me a joke about the Seahawks and you were on an iPhone, I can press on that message and then I'll get a list of options: exclamation point, heart, laughing, thumbs down, thumbs up. Rudy Giuliani will regularly like his own text messages to reporters, or he'll emphasize them like. He's like, and apparently this is a thing that a lot of kind of older people do because they don't really understand the format. I mean, we're right on the edge of that ourselves. Don't get me wrong. But,
yeah.
So anyway, this piece by Olivia is great. So anyway, check that out. New York Magazine. But I thought of it because there was a picture of Rudy Giuliani just like with his head in his hands, sitting at some public event, just looking overwhelmed. And it's like this was as he had done his this is a couple months ago, as he had done his 15th. You know, poorly thought out media interview where he said something that contradicted mm-hmm. the president or himself or whatever. And I think I wrote something like, you never hear about the one out of five unqualified candidates that you weren't able to get. They never talk about the one in five candidates that are unqualified that you didn't get through. I'm doing double negatives here, but it was a ZipRecruiter joke.
How did it land though? Because I mean, I get what you're connecting those two things. But if I were to read that, just flipping through, I'm wondering if I would get that. I probably would.
I may have, who knows? I may have deleted it by now because that's the thing that I do. Right. I'll just go back and delete stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it got an okay response. I think the idea was that it was heavily reliant on a lot of people listening to a lot of podcasts because, you know, ZipRecruiter is definitely using that medium and that space to promote themselves. And so my thought was if you listen to any podcast that has any advertising, there's a decent chance you'll hear that four out of five companies found a candidate with ZipRecruiter. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I always wonder, it's sort of like that four out of five dentists recommend Crest. It's like, well, what did the fifth one do?
Yeah, he's huffing glue in the back.
What's going on with that?
He's not recommending anything. He's just...
I mean, what's, like, is he okay? Have we checked on him? And so I always like to hear about the person who's not with the group on whatever this particular thing is. So
I should have said he's huffing laughing gas, not glue. He's a dentist or she's a dentist. Mm-hmm. Oh shit. Hold on. I'm going to fix this.
Or they're a dentist.
They're a dentist. Yes, they picked up my garbage. Yay. They were just late. Yeah, I know you're disappointed. Oh. Like, we could have had a week of content. They were just later than usual.
Kind of relying on that for later in the week.
I know, but I was very relieved after the show. I went downstairs. I'm like, I'm just going to check to see if they picked it up, but I know they didn't. I was already all worked up. I was already fighting with them in my head. I was already ready to, you know, when you have a bunch of memes, you got to be ready for a meme war. I was ready for them to say it wasn't out at the curb and me to say, really? Because maybe you should check your Twitter where I tweeted you the picture of it out at the curb, you bozo. I was like really ready to go off. Of course, I don't even have these conversations.
Go off, King.
I just forward them to our property manager and she takes care of it. But I was all worked up about it. Then it turns out, oh no, they were just like, they picked it up about an hour later than usual. Everything's fine. I need to calm the hell down.
Speaking of which, I'd like to tell you about the Calm app.
Yes. That was a pretty good calm.
That was, actually. You teed that one up. I think we've hit most of the major...
I think we've
hit most of the major currently running sponsors. So we don't even need to take this break, but let's just do it anyway, just out of formality.
We already covered all those bases.
Can you work a bowl and branch into a Rudy Giuliani tweet?
I'm on it. How many president's lawyers have slept on bowl and branch? That's what I want to know.
All right, let's do that, though. Let's take that break, and then we'll come back, and we'll do our top stories and emails and the whole bit in a moment here on TBTL. a little say hi from Seattle, Washington, Eric Elbogen, and one-time guest on old TBTL. Those live shows that we did at the Columbia City Theater, he played.
Yeah, I think I might have been there for the Say Hi show. I can't remember. We've talked about, you did two shows in a row, and I was at one of them, but we've talked so much about both of them. I'm conflating my memories with what I just know happened at some of them. But I was, you know what? I was there when you had the Blue Scholars on. One of them was in person, and one of them was by satellite, which was interesting. And I'm pretty sure that's the same show where our friends got married, right? No?
Yeah, possible. I mean, honestly, it is. That is one of the blurriest blurs that I've ever blurred. Those two shows back to back, because I mean, there was like Sir Mix-a-Lot was on the show, Smoosh.
Yeah, and I was
a listener. Dr. Jim's wife played violin. Like we had, it was just a cavalcade of guests that could have been on either. Either night, but it all kind of blends together in my mind. But yeah, I will say this about that Say Hi obviously was there too. The Blue Scholars thing. You know what I was kind of proud of was, I don't know if you remember this from that interview, but because Sob Z was in New York and Gio was in Seattle at like Live in the Room, we did this silly thing where we had Sob Z like activate like a track from New York through this like Rube Goldberg-y machine. So it was like he did something in New York, like he called a phone that was in Seattle, which then like buzzed and knocked something over, and then it basically activated the track, and then Gio rapped over it. Do you remember this?
I don't remember that. I remember that there was a lot of talk about like kind of the craziness of him being so far away and you guys making it happen. I didn't remember a physical Rube Goldberg-y thing, but I might have
it
been.
Was this a
I don't know.
It was this attempt to like kind of just because, you know, we wanted them to do a song, but one of them wasn't there, but we wanted him to be involved.
Right.
And so it was, and then it was, but it was the kind of thing that just would 9 times out of 10 is going to go wrong. Like the NFL stats on it, it had a 0.001%.
The next gen stats.
Chance. The next gen stats on it were that it had a 0.001% chance of completion, and it actually worked.
That's pretty
this was,
sweet.
You know, in the earlier days of the internet, granted,
right.
You know, 2000 and whatever, 2010 isn't like, it wasn't like the Stone Age, but the idea that we were broadcasting Sob Z on a big screen in this theater, talking to him, he was hearing us, talking back to us, and then able to like hit this thing and it actually worked. That is a very low probability of working out, and it did. So that was, you'll appreciate this as a producer, Andrew. Like, that's probably the highlight of the whole weekend for me is that
for you,
one dumb thing
landed.
Working.
Yeah, and did you have, like, a crew, like, who did you have kind of on the production end of things and the technical end of things other than the people
it's
who
actually
ran the
kind
theater?
Of funny because, yeah, I had a guy named Adam Levin helping me out
who was
Miniature Tigers' manager. The way that I met him was, he managed that band Miniature Tigers, who we love. And when they came through town and played, I think, at Azteca for us. The history of this show and its bizarro behavior sometimes stuns even me. When I just say casually, oh, that time that we had them come through and go and play a show at the Mexican restaurant across the street from our radio station. Some people would be like, well, why didn't you do it at the radio station? I don't know. Azteca had more alcohol.
And tacos.
So anyway, Adam and I hit it off, and so he helped produce a couple of different TBTL live events, including that one. And I have to say, he was really, really useful. He also really cracked the whip at one point. I can't remember any of the details other than there was a moment where we were in rehearsal. What a wild time in this show's history. We rehearsed things. And we're like going through all these slides. That was when like Email Frenzy was born, and that was like a picture of Sylvester Stallone, like a slide, and he's like shooting emails out of his gun. And we were just like, there were so many moving parts of these live shows.
I made you some slide because I was starting to get to know you there, and I made you a janky Blursday slide. I wasn't really a part of the show at all. I was just like kind of a friend.
I remember you doing this though.
Yeah, that's right.
You were very much a friend.
Yeah, I know. I love TBTL, so I was so glad to be a part of it. I forgot about those slides. I must have them on a hard drive somewhere.
They were pretty great, and it was a fun show. I don't know how much it really helped with the like radio product that people heard later, or in this case, the podcast product. But I remember there was just this point where it was, you know, everything was overloaded. Like there was, I don't know, multiple bands playing each night, and it was like what I know now from doing Livewire is that it's a whole thing with bands. Soundcheck is like a very sacred thing, and it's very important. I'm not trying to downplay it, but it's like. It's not just – you don't just show up and plug your stuff in and then by the way, I think Andy Haynes performed at one of those shows
too. Really?
Wow. There may have been a Trachtenberg there. It's like – honestly, it's bananas how many pounds of TBTL we piled into the sack of those two nights. But anyway, yeah, I know that was an unfortunate way to describe that, and I apologize. But anyway, yeah, there was this moment where there was some like – We were starting to run behind schedule for soundcheck because there were so many different people and things that needed to test stuff. And Adam just reached his breaking point. And from you remember being at the show, there was that like upper balcony area that was kind of like the VIP hangout.
That's where I was. Not to brag.
And you kind of it was very imperious being up there. You're kind of looking down on the venue and the stage. You're kind of high up. And I remember Adam just standing at the balcony, just ripping. Everyone a new asshole. Like, maybe I was the only person who was spared. And maybe not.
Over what types of things? Like, you're not hitting your marks or what?
No, I think over just the... How do I explain it? When you have a bunch of different bands trying to play the same venue on the same night, there's going to be some jockeying for position. There's going to be, you know, we need this DI... you know, input. We need this. And so, and then if the bands have management and then the management is like, well, you know, we were told this was going to happen. Like there's just a bunch of small, petty skirmishes going on at all times. Mm-hmm. And I think that he just reached his breaking point of like just the BS of trying to get this whole thing pulled together. And it was very funny because the vibe of TBTL, for all my rage-a-hauling, it was not usually that. Like, it just wasn't that as professional. Like, I think what happened was a person who professionally does this at some point hit their breaking point with just the rolling level of BS that's associated with anything TBTL related.
Right.
And then that's what happened.
Well, I know that you're it was a long time ago and you don't remember all the details. And also, we don't want to throw Adam under the bus. But out of curiosity, was the vibe sort of like, all these bands are coming in, they're jockeying for things, they have a bunch of needs, and he's sort of like getting cranky with them, or he's getting cranky at the people who are supposed to be making sure these bands are having a good experience and getting what they need?
No, it was definitely – it was not related to the venue. It was because the Columbia City Theater folks were really awesome. I believe it was just a moment in time where I think his mind was like, if we keep just kind of gently talking around – whatever these issues are, we are literally not going to get everything done before people start streaming into this theater.
Yeah, I feel
it. And so somebody has to kind of get control of this situation and start just not negotiating, not kind of like having a Chautauqua here, but having a like, this is what we're going to do
right
in the next 20 minutes. This is exactly how it's going to happen. And so I think that's kind of the tone. And it was actually – it worked out okay because I was definitely good cop after that.
Yeah, like, right. See, that's kind of the thing you need. I mean, you're saying this and I wasn't there and I don't know. I mean, everybody's got to be careful to, you know, tone in any professional environment. But I also, as somebody who's a producer, kind of admire that as well. I mean, somebody like him whose job it is to juggle that many things and live shows just can be – so much. And I mean, take one quarter of what you were trying to do in one of those shows, and that would be some heavy lifting. So I kind of respect his position and respect his like, kind of like, listen, at a certain point, like, this shit needs to get done, and somebody's got to be that person.
Yeah, no, it was actually, it was effective, and it was like the logistics of those shows were just so completely ridiculous. You know, looking back on it, that, I mean, and yeah, also there was a wedding.
Yeah,
on stage. I mean, it's like that's like you mentioned it, but it's basically as I'm listing the things that happened on that show that were like crazy. I'm not even getting into the fact that two people got married. There was a surprise wedding on stage that did I officiate it? I think I officiated it, or maybe we group officiated it. I don't know. It's just it was fun. And then I thought, well, let's try to sell that show, and then did we talk?
Oh, we talked about this and the boat. Yeah. So this is these are the two shows that you charge people what, a dollar to download each one?
Something like 99 cents, and it was just like it went from we were being told it's like we get a million downloads a show to like 40 people listen right. to this. I think months later, I probably put them back out as episodes. But I mean, my thinking on that has really changed. You and I talk about this off air all the time about kind of what's the best version of a TBTL live show. And I honestly think that we're getting it more dialed in these days because I think that the listeners are excited to, bizarre as it is to me, I think they're excited to meet you and me. And also to just like kind of hang out in the TBTL universe in person. And this is like what's happening right now is the TBTL universe as opposed to, you know, God bless Sir Mix-a-Lot, but he's not really part of the TBTL universe. It's kind of cool to see him. And I'm sure the people who went to those shows had a great time. But, you know, you and I talk a lot about like the live versions of podcasts and how the ones that we listen to very regularly, a lot of times the live version moves down the list for us as far as the ones that we're excited about. So the closer we can get our live events to sounding kind of like this, boring as this might be,
yeah.
I still think we're then delivering to the listeners the thing they're listening to most of the time.
Of course, the studio version of the TBTL universe was different then too. So I don't think it was – you know, doing one of those shows today would seem very out of sync with what we do. But it was less out of sync with what you guys were doing when you were literally sitting in a studio for 3 hours. Now, I know when it was turned into a podcast, a lot of that was commercials that were cut out and it maybe ended up being – you know, a little over 90 minutes or 2 hours. But but you're in a studio for 3 hours. You guys relied on guests so much more even in the studio. So kind of replicating that on stage, I don't think was necessarily a miss.
You know, I'm wondering, maybe we were getting a million downloads. And then when I shifted the show into being just me, that's when we started to really get down to a much lower number. And I've always attributed it to computer problems. Maybe it's just people were more interested in hearing Derek Erdman and, you know, who were other guests that we had? Rachel Dratch. That was a good interview.
Oh, yeah. That's what I hear. Wasn't it true, though, that didn't a bunch of consultants say, like, well, to get your numbers back up, you got to, like, get this guy Andrew Walsh on the show? Like, he's just kind of like
–
he's just kind of really buzzing right now. And, you know, a lot of other podcasts.
It was so strange, though.
Marins
I never
and talks.
Met the consultant that was really pushing for that. I never met him, but he had a New Hampshire area code. And he talked with this kind of weird accent that kind of moved all over the place. But he was very, very – I could hear that he was wearing a fake mustache through the phone.
Yeah, I remember
on top
this
of
guy.
His real mustache.
Yeah.
That was the strangest part of that phone call. I was like, I can hear a fake mustache glued on top of a real mustache rustling against the receiver on the phone.
What was his name? It was like something Bernandez, right?
I think it was Bandrew Bernandez.
Yeah, that's right. He put us in touch. And, you know, I'm glad that I, you know, things would have been different, you know, if I had hooked up with Scott Aukerman or somebody else. But I'm, you know, I'm glad to be here with you.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Bandrew Bernandez for bringing us together. Oh, and shout out to these folks for donating to the show. For making this episode possible, talking about Sierra Barsotti of Williamsburg, Virginia, Heather Burke of beautiful Bainbridge Island, Washington, one of the most lovely places on planet Earth, Becky Finch of West Jordan, Utah. Maybe that's why West Jordan came up a while ago on the show, and I said I had thoughts. I said West Jordan seems to be in my consciousness. Or somewhere in Utah that I said was in my consciousness. Maybe just from college football. I don't know. But Becky, thanks for checking in from West Jordan. Sarah Templeton of Portland, Oregon. Thank you for donating. Sarah Vila of Austin,
Vila.
Texas. We know Sarah.
I see her name a lot. I always think it's Vela, but or Vela.
Ooh, maybe Vela.
By the way, I heard that, you know, Sarah was one of the organizers of the, I think it was in Austin, the meetup this last weekend. I had never heard how that went. I hope it went well, all you Austens.
Yeah. Sarah, thank you for donating to the show. Thanks for being an awesome member of the TBTL world. And then, of course, Kim Haskett from Snoqualmie, Washington, a Snoqualmie, famously, of our show. Kim, Sarah, other Sarah, Becky, Heather, and other Sierra. Thank you. You know, I wanted Addie's name to be Sierra.
No, I didn't know that.
Before she was born.
But you chose.
No, I did not choose Adelaide. Oh, I mean, I'm happy with it. I was very happy. I was pleased with it. But if I had had my druthers, which I didn't at the time because her mom and I were not allowed to see each other because we had gotten pregnant, which I always thought was kind of funny. I was like, do you think I'm going to get her pregnant again? So it would be like another baby born 3 months after the first baby. But I was not really involved in the negotiations over the name or the decision-making process. My vote would have been for Sierra, of the more like Sierra Nevada spelling. Sierra Barsotti's name is C-I-A-R-A. But I said, how about Sierra? And then I was informed on the day of my daughter's birth that her name was, in fact, Adelaide.
You know who could have gotten that done for you is your old producer, Adam. Do you think that he would have walked away with Adelaide? No way, man.
I walk into the room at Northwest Hospital in Seattle, and there's just Adam is just screaming at Addie's, the maternal side of Addie's family, just being like,
we're done here.
This ends now. It's Sierra. And I'm not having any more of this bullshit. Thank you, babies, for making TBTL possible. We would not be doing the show without you. That is a true statement.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I'll try to be brief about this because it's really more of just a setup, I guess, Andrew, about this whole turkey situation. But Thursday, obviously, is Thanksgiving. We will have a new show for y'all, albeit maybe a slightly brief one, but we'll put some new content out on Thursday and Friday, so look for that. Actually, the Thanksgiving show, can we include some of that Charlie Brown, Brown business per usual?
Oh, yeah.
That's like, I don't know how important it is to the listeners, but to me, Andrew, the Charlie Brownification of the Thanksgiving show is really the beginning also of just like, we're doing this, we're leaning into Christmas and the whole thing. It fills me with warm feelings. But anyway, in preparation for that, I've been trying to figure out what the best, because pretty much everything else on the Thanksgiving menu I can eat. I don't really care about stuffing that much. So to the degree that there's meat in stuffing, I don't mind swerving on that. Mashed potatoes, I love. I mean, really, I'm in the Thanksgiving game for mashed potatoes and those rolls, those Hawaiian rolls. That's kind of all I care about. So,
are you making sure that the mashed potatoes? Because I assume that you're a gravy man. You seem like a gravy man. Isn't gravy often based on meat? Are you going to make sure there's a vegetarian gravy?
Well, I'm actually not a gravy man. I'm not against it, but it's not. It just doesn't. I'm a butter person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm
a butter. I put a lot of butter on my mashed potatoes. That's where the part about being vegan has eluded me because of my deep love of butter and cheese, really. But I can take gravy or leave gravy. There are a lot of good, like, the thing about gravy is that there are plenty of vegan or vegetarian gravy options where I don't think you have a huge drop off as far as flavor. So I can whip up a pot of that if I really decide I want to have some gravy. But also, my family doesn't have this traditional, like, I don't come from food people. It's funny because now my sister Sarah and her husband own a restaurant. They're very much food people. My sister Liz is an amazing cook. She's a food person. My sister Hannah cooks. It's like, but we're not from food people. So we don't have a family recipe around gravy where you pull out the, like, you know, giblets and you do a whole thing. That's just not really our vibe. I'm sure that it's been just a packet of gnar gravy thrown into some water or something in years past. So anyway, I have been trying to crack the code on a fake turkey thing so that I can have my plate look more or less like everybody else's. I've been online. I've been doing research. And yesterday I went out and bought – I had to go to three stores, but I bought tofurkey plant-based roast with wild rice stuffing. By the way, Andrew, that comes in at about $17.
Wow. For how much?
For 26 ounces, 1 pound, I believe. And I got some corn, spelled Q-U-O-R-N, meatless roast. I got some Gardein holiday roast, a meatless turkey roast stuffed with kale, cranberry, and wild rice. And then just because I was in that section and I had another $17 to burn, I bought some plant-based ham-style roast, also made by Tofurky, as somebody pointed out on Twitter. It says, with amber ale glaze.
Quick question, not bringing this up to be a needle nose or to undermine you, but just to avoid correction emails or people getting mad at us. How many ounces is that? It's 16 ounces to a pound. Is that what you said? It's a 16-ounce thing?
Well, here's what it says on the box of the Tofurky plant-based roast. It says net weight, 26 ounces.
26,
and then parenthetically underneath it says 1 pound, 10 ounces.
Okay.
So,
okay, there you go.
So I guess that's the official.
Okay.
This was a lot, way more money than I was expecting to spend on this. But the reason I got – and I know that some of them are going to be bad. That was the thing. People want to be helpful online. So I posted a picture of this and I said things are going to get real this Thanksgiving. And then I put an asterisk and underneath I said extremely fake or whatever. And the responses were varied from people who are vegan or vegetarian that were telling me which one I was going to like the most and also that I shouldn't have bought the Tofurky one. And then from people who – are in my life, but maybe I'm not that close to her. Like, literally, are you okay? Like, I think our friend Kim Holcomb said, is everything okay? My friend Courtney Hameister said, are you okay? It was like a lot of people being confused. Like, are you going through something right now, Burbs, with this cavalcade of fake meat? So, my assumption is that if one out of these four items is actually edible, that will be a win. I'm assuming that some of them will be not great, but I want to do this experiment just so I can kind of compare all of them. So I bought some mashed potato fixings. I didn't buy real mashed potatoes, Andrew. I bought instant ones because I'm lazy and I don't want to dirty every pot in our house to make real mashed potatoes. And I'm going to have real mashed potatoes on Thursday, but I need to have, you know, actually I should have gotten some cranberries too. I need to kind of have like as close an approximation to the Thanksgiving vibe as possible. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to cook these things up. Now, I know the ham is an outlier, but I just love ham and like mm-hmm. I love real ham.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought was if this fake ham actually is edible and kind of good, that could be something to look at for Easter. Just nice to have in my back pocket, as it were. So I'm going to cook all four of these things up this afternoon.
Okay,
and I'm going to.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to – I think – I don't know. Maybe I'll get pushed to tomorrow. We have a lot of show to record tomorrow, so I guess it kind of depends. But the plan is I'm probably going to cook these all up tonight, and I will report back during our Thanksgiving show as to which one was the most edible, if any of them were, and just kind of my experience. So I just wanted to give everyone a preview of what's going to happen there.
And then your plan is whichever one wins out, assuming it's one or maybe more than one, you will then go back to the store, buy more of it, and go to your parents' house with that and then prepare it at your parents' house?
Yes, and I was mildly hurt on the Hawk Squad text chain because I checked in. Everyone was like, we'll bring this and we'll bring our world-famous broccoli salad. And I was like, and I'll bring some fake turkey. Not that anybody wants that. And then I expect a couple people to be like, oh, maybe I'll try it. Just crickets. Yeah, absolute crickets on that.
Yeah, I'll bring crickets.
I get it. I'll bring fake crickets.
yeah.
I've heard about some really good meatless cricket options. No, I mean, like, I get that, first of all, I think turkeys – I have a lot of animal empathy. I don't have a ton for turkeys. They just – it's a very – turkeys are a very hard animal, I think, to
love.
To develop a huge amount of empathy for. I mean, even more so than like chickens are kind of cute. Turkeys are weird looking. And like, I mean, turkeys are like, I don't need to explain what a turkey looks like to our listeners. It's just funny that like I'm doing this for an animal that I actually have I don't have empathy for turkey.
Because it looks weird. That's what I love the most about this. You're body shaming turkeys now. You only care mm-hmm. about animals that attain a certain kind of beauty.
It's not even as much about the turkey's body. Mm-hmm. I think it's about – I've never cuddled with a turkey. I've never mm-hmm. seen – all I need to do is see a video of a turkey being reunited with someone who saved it from a car crash 20 years previous.
Or what about – I would love to watch a military service member coming back from overseas and being reunited with his or her turkey. Yeah, I'd love that.
Service turkey.
Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, though, I saw a video, I probably talked about this on the show some months ago, of a condor, which is pretty close to a turkey just in terms of being a giant bird that mm-hmm. doesn't have a lot of cuddliness to it. And this guy had saved this condor years ago, and he was reunited with it, and the condor's hugging him, and I was there for that. I was very, like, now I think of condors differently. Mm-hmm. And condors are also pretty unsympathetic animals.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any good footage of turkeys being cute to either humans or other animals, hit me up on that, because that will make me feel less dumb that I'm eating fake turkey products this Thanksgiving, when really, honestly, who cares about turkeys? But anyway, update on that coming up on the Thanksgiving show. Here's the thing I'm really excited to tell you about, Andrew, which is this local TV interview that Papa John did with a station in, I want to say he is from Missouri. I believe that's where this station is located. Let me just drag the file over here real quick so I can play it for you.
While you do that, I'm going to send you a video. Yeah. I don't know if this really fits, but you can report on this later in the week. But I'm going to send you a video of a little puppy who's watching over a bunch of little turkey chicks. So, I mean, the puppy is definitely the cutest part of this, but I'm just wondering if maybe this will kind of melt your cold heart towards turkeys a little bit.
Says the guy who's going to be mainlining turkey all of Thursday while I'm eating some terrible fake turkey product. Right. People probably know that the guy from Papa John's, who I don't know why I don't know a ton about his like politics or his whatever, but I sort of just assume that the guy who is Papa John, I kind of assume that he's just not a dude that I would have a ton in common with, like, if we were just hanging out somewhere. He seems like, and again, I've never met him, but he emanates this vibe that I just feel like is not really my vibe, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think he's, like, you know, for whatever it's worth, politically pretty, I think that he was giving to a lot of organizations that you and I would not support and stuff, right? So,
I mean, I would be very unsurprised to be reunited with that information if that was in fact really the case. And he lost his position at Papa John's because I think also part of it is that, and you know, actually our friend Drew McFrizz worked in the Papa John's industry. The guy who we married at the show, those many years ago, that live show. He worked for Papa John's and you know, I think that company was really good to him at a time in his life when he was recently released from prison. So that was good. So, you know, I'm going to give him some Papa John on that, the company. Props a John.
Oh, props a John. I'll fit that, sure.
Okay, thanks. He is hilarious, dog. Who is that joke? Anyway, I've always, like, you know, have, like, Papa John and Peyton Manning. Papa John weirdly throwing pizza and saying better ingredients, better pizza. I was like, I've eaten the pizza. It's not better ingredients. It's not better pizza. It's fine. It is what it is. I also eat Domino's pizza sometimes, which is also not better ingredients, better pizza. Sometimes you're in the mood for pizza that just tastes a certain way, and I respect that. But I think that the claim that it's better ingredients, better pizza never quite convinced me. And again, yeah, just like he seems like a guy who's also kind of had a lot of work. He seems like – you know what he seems like is the alternate universe version of me. He probably low carbs a lot at times. He looks like he's had some dermabrasion. His face is kind of a little bit shiny in this way of like he's having nips and tucks done so he can stay
–
so he can kind of like stay young appearing when he's at his, you know, vacation home in Fort Lauderdale where – the number of young women there is outnumbered only by the number of jet skis. Like, I just have a whole kind of idea around this guy. So he gets fired from the company or removed because he says the N-word in a meeting. His argument is that he said it to point out how much he doesn't like the N-word. But I will tell you this, Andrew. I'm a person who also doesn't like the N-word. I've never said it in a meeting.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot like the N-word and not say it as a way of proving how much you don't like it.
Because I can't remember the actual quote, but he was using it kind of in third person, like he was referencing the word. I do remember that. But it is just like, how is your judgment, like what – I just don't understand. I know that this isn't the point of it, but since it's come up, like I just don't understand the judgment call in that. Like, are you thinking – here are the options I can think of. He thinks that because he's so not racist – he can mm-hmm. say this and everybody will just accept it as it is, even though he's a super famous person. There's tons of people on this call. He just kind yeah. of doesn't realize how it sounds because he's so not racist. He has a – or here's another one. Maybe he's more comfortable saying the word in other right. contexts, so it doesn't raise as many red flags for him as it does us. Maybe right. maybe that's it. Or maybe number three is he was drunk during this meeting. Like I don't know.
Well,
if there's another.
I mean, you know, there is famously that picture of him
yeah.
at a college basketball game where he's just sad. Done. Now listen, I am the last person who needs to be giving anyone any grief about intoxication in public and poor decisions around alcohol. So I'll step back from that particular piece of criticism just for myself because I can't talk shit on that level. But that being said, I think you're right. I think that no matter which one of those three options, actually drunk is honestly the best possibility for those three.
Yeah.
Because the other ones, I will tell you this, 100%.
I don't know, though. These people who get drunk and then are suddenly racist.
Sure.
That doesn't speak well to who they are when they're sober. Like
exactly. It's like just sobriety is the only thing tamping down the racism.
Yeah, that's – yeah. Like who's
so
the guy who's
none
on
of
the
them
Malibu –
are good options.
Why am I – Mel Gibson on the Malibu Highway. Like, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Suddenly you're racist and anti-Semitic just because you're super drunk?
Yeah. I will tell you this, 100% of people who are racist would tell you that they're the least racist person that they know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is, so the idea, you're right, the option number one that you presented, which is that he thinks he's so not racist that he can use that word, is if you were to go in and dissect the brain of every racist person, you might find a certain amount of CTE, but you would also find a lot of evidence of them thinking, mm-hmm. literally thinking they're not racist,
yeah.
and that's why they can use that word. If you put me on, I'm not trying to act holier than thou, but if you put me on a desert island, or is it a deserted island? If you
I guess it would have to be a deserted island. Yeah, you've pointed that out.
If you put me on a deserted island, and it was like it was some castaway shit, there was no 10,000 miles in every direction. There are no other humans. I would look around before I even whispered the N-word out loud.
Yeah.
Like,
and also you wouldn't want to,
right? But I mean, it's like that is how
yeah.
that's how deeply. Like again, I'm not trying to. I got a lot of problems, and I am not doing everything right in my life as far as it relates to a lot of things with our culture and how we talk to people of other races and all of that. I'm not trying to hold myself up as any example, but I don't think I've said that word since I was a kid and didn't really understand how bad it was. Like, and even then, I don't know if it's shocking the idea that he said that word in public on a call for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But he now thinks that it's, you know, he's been ousted from his company unceremoniously and in an unfair way. And he thinks that the pizza product has gone downhill, which he gets to in this interview. Let me just play you a little bit of this, Andrew. Again, okay. As I said at the top of the show, the Papa John's part of it is kind of, there's a couple of kind of funny moments, unintentionally so on his part. But really what kills me are just the number of different times that this TV reporter make sure to really lean into the like sort of bad pizza wordplay. So here we go.
It was the controversy that ousted the Papa of pizza.
Looking back now, do you think that you were set up?
Oh, there's no question about it. And the public knows that. This is all a
By the way, I don't think the public knows that. Like, for the record. Like, you know, I here we are talking about it on this show, so I don't want to undersell the celebrity status of Papa John, but like my feeling is that he, and again, us talking about this really belies this point that I'm trying to make, but like I feel like his sense of how much the public thinks about Papa John is probably a little bit out of whack.
Yeah, like Papa John's Papa John as a person. Like, I don't think most people care. I think the people who care are the people like us who don't like him. I don't think the people who
and think
like
it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there are people like, kind of oh, this pizza's pretty good, but man, I really miss the days when Papa John was really running this place.
Right, exactly. Like, he doesn't have – I don't think that there's a strongly pro-Papa John, constituency. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people are either have no opinion on him or think he's kind of a dork. But there aren't, like
– I'm a never-popper, just so you know.
Are you a never-popper, sir?
I'm an always-popper.
Farce.
This is John Schnatter's side of the story, and it's loaded.
Okay, now.
Oh, like a pizza?
Is that, I mean, do you think that's got to be a pizza reference,
yeah,
right? Although
yeah,
in
yeah.
this part of the country, I don't think we really call it a loaded pizza. We call it like loaded nachos. We talk about loading food up, but not, I've never heard of a loaded pizza, but that's, loaded is a very weird, I think that guy's trying to make a pizza joke there, don't you
I think so too, yeah. I don't, it doesn't really land with me, but yes, I think,
right. Like,
there's no way you, because you just wouldn't use loaded there in any other context. It doesn't make sense.
But the problem with the joke to me, and again, I am the official final word on jokes and if they're good or bad. The problem with the joke there is that I don't think people really say loaded pizza. So you got to just, you got to find another way to.
It's John Schnatter's side of the story, and it's loaded.
Nothing sells like the truth. And the truth, sooner or later, all comes out.
For the first time.
I'm also going to disagree with that. I think if we've learned anything in our current version of life, it's that the truth is very hard to pin down. And I think convenient lies that fit into people's pre-existing notions about the world, they sell really well. Have you heard that's must be a saying, right? Nothing sells like the truth.
That doesn't ring a bell to me. By the way, loaded is a thing. If you type in loaded pizza, okay. You get a million results. So just fact checking that. But I have not heard that expression before.
I take it back. Loaded, solid spoof.
But it might be regional thing. Like you say, it might be Utica or something, because I don't. Yeah. I've never used that phrase, I'll tell you.
We
that
call
much.
It loaded hams.
Mm-hmm.
Show title, loaded hams. Mm-hmm. I'll also mention that I have lightly edited this audio tape because he goes down a whole rabbit hole of just name-checking all of the executives that he thinks double-crossed him.
Oh.
And it's too complicated and boring to follow. But the long and short of it is that Papa John thinks that these people – were plotting to take his company away from him, and they conveniently used the fact that he said the N-word during a meeting as a way of getting rid of him. My guess is that if everything was great at the company, and if he was awesome and not a douche, they would have let this slide in some way. They would have made him go to some kind of training session or like. There would have been – I don't think that they were just plotting to get rid of him for no reason. I bet you that there was a bunch of stuff going on either with the bottom line or with him or with both where they were like, we need to move on from the Papa John running this thing, and this maybe was the last straw, as it were.
Wasn't there also
–
can I just jump in here? Because wasn't this scandal also set up because he had made the controversial comment about how pizza sales were dipping during football games because of the kneeling during the national anthem? So that kind of set the stage for this. And then people were like, other pizza companies came out and said, our sales are great, like during football games and not like, you know, like always
you're
pizza
totally
the
right.
hut
I forgot
or whatever.
About that.
So that kind of set it up. And then he comes out and he uses the N-word in a meeting. So,
well, he was trying to out pizza the hut.
He was. That's I couldn't remember it. He was trying to out
as many
the
people
hut.
Do. Yeah. What about those Domino's commercials where they're like, if you get a bad pizza delivery, it not only ruins your day, it embarrasses us or whatever they
Luke,
say. Then they go out.
We don't even have time to get into my rant on that commercial. Veeves and I mean, every time it comes on, we just say the same thing over and over. I mean, it is.
What do you say?
Okay. First of all, it is ridiculous. It starts off in this it starts off like a – why do I always forget his name? Well, we know why. West Wing guy.
Aaron Sorkin.
It starts off with this kind of Sorkin-esque shot of behind the scenes of a Domino's pizza, right, where they're kind of like, when we mess up your order, it embarrasses us. And then they start listing all the ways they might fuck up your order, which, like, Domino's, like, we might accidentally spit in your pizza. Maybe we'll just body slam it, and that's on us, and we feel terrible. We can't sleep at night. And then they go on this whole thing. I told you we'd have time.
We're drinking so much more than we used to.
It's ruining our family life because we can't deal with the stress of having
our daughter hasn't talked to us in months.
So first they list all the things they might do to mess up your pizza. Then they talk about how it's just destroying them inside. Then their solution to it is to deliver a bunch of unwanted pizzas in the middle of the day to a bunch of women living in the suburbs. Like, that's literally what happens next. You see them dispatch catch a bunch of delivery drivers, and it's always like, you know, it's always for whatever reason in this commercial, it's always women in the middle of the day answering the door. And the pizza person said, the Domino's person says, "We understand that we messed up your pizza the other day. We want to make it right to you." Like, I like pizza. I mean, I guess getting a random pizza in the middle of the day, but like, what are the chances somebody's going to be home and like, or that
and
you're
hungry for pizza
like
at moment
3:30 in the afternoon? Like, it just doesn't make any sense at all. So anyway, that's
my other the last thing I'll throw in there. No, I love it. I love it. I love the passion. The other thing about the commercial, though, that I find weird is, like, I believe this is implied in the sort of, you know, customer-business relationship is if they screw something up, they are supposed to fix it.
Immediately, like, not the next day.
I don't think I need to sign up for any pizza insurance from William Penn Life. I think it's just called, "You didn't bring the right pizza, please bring me the right pizza," right?
Exactly.
Isn't that just how all of this works? Like, at Domino's, we promise – If we wiped our ass on your pizza and you find out, we'll bring you a different pizza
the next day,
ass on
randomly, if we happen to draw your name out of a hat.
To whoever is at that address at that time. But you know what I mean? It's like, I just think they're making this big deal about how they're going to get the order. They're going to make it right if they mess it up. And I'm like, I'm hoping that was always the system.
Yes.
That just seems like, you know, that's just how this works anyway.
Yep, your lips to Papa John's ears, my friend.
All right, so more Papa J here.
Sooner or later, all comes out.
For the first time, Schneider is talking publicly about the firestorm that forced him to walk away from the company he built into one of the nation's largest pizza chains. The new CEO is former Arby's president, Rob Lynch.
I don't know why that detail cracks me up so much. What, like, it's... I have a fascination with Arby's just because of eating a lot of it in my childhood. And let's be honest, my adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why the idea of the Arby's guy trying to run Papa John's just cracks me up, but it just does. It's like two sort of dopey food brands that have – I mean, again, credit to Arby's on some level, but, you know, the We Have the Meats is very iconic. And again, I kind of love Arby's in this weird way. But Papa John's is not into it because why, Andrew? This guy comes from a roast beef background, and it's not.
What?
This guy doesn't know his pizza. He only knows having the meats.
Rob Lynch, he's never been a CEO. He has no pizza experience. He's never been in the pizza category. He doesn't really.
What do you think you need to know in the pizza
in the
category?
Pizza category. You're running.
Stop body slamming the pizzas.
Yeah, right. It is weird how all the pizzas are roast beef flavored now. It's like the crust is roast beef infused. The only toppings you can get are roast beef or more roast beef, which is weird. Or brisket, I understand. They have the meats.
Papa John's. We just got the meats. Like. I mean, no offense. It's a big, giant company with a lot of spreadsheet. Like, that's what you probably need to know if you're running it. I like this idea that Papa John's is like, he doesn't understand pizza the way I understand pizza. Now, okay, look. Papa John did start with, I think, a pizza shop, and he worked his way up. So I'm not saying he knows nothing about the business. He probably knows a lot about the business. But something about him being side-eye towards the Arby's guy, just I love it.
He's never been in the pizza category. He doesn't really have a passion for quality. And probably most important, he doesn't have a passion for people.
Shots
all
fired.
Changes, Schneider says, send his company into a downward spiral.
They've hurt people that wake up every day and make this company great. I mean, it's a miserable place over there. I mean, they're losing all their good people.
And after years of touting better ingredients, better pizza, Schneider says it's ultimately the customers were left with a bad taste in their mouths.
No. Got it. I'm wondering, because I don't want to go too far behind or pull the curtain back too far, but let's just say that my experience working in TV these last few years has been that as the person who's reading the script, you've got to push back hard on a lot of wordplay. Mm. Some wordplay can be fun, but like, I'm wondering, was it this reporter? I don't even think they have producers at the local level, like in this way. So this is this reporter whose name I actually don't have in front of me, who's just said, I'm not going to miss any chance to turn a phrase. Leave no phrase unturned.
Yes.
It's really happening.
Taste in their mouths.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days.
What?
Oh, that's Excuse me? My God. Dude, that's why I know of this. At some point, yes, somebody made a GIF of him saying, yeah. I've had. Did you retweet that? Is that why I saw it? Of him
No,
just
David
Roth
was retweeting like a chopped and screwed version.
Yes,
which
yes,
is where I saw
that's
this.
What I saw. Yeah. Okay.
But let's just take a moment to reflect on this. Papa John, in the last 30 days, has ordered 40 pizzas from Papa John's, which he's no longer allowed to work at, just to quality control the product.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days, and it's not the same.
Now, honestly, there have been points in my life where I've had over 40 pizzas in 30 days as well. So I can't, again, I can't diss him on that, but that is just a weird image for me. Either he's lying, which is a weird thing to lie about, or he is literally on a personal campaign to taste test Papa John's pizzas. To what end? I don't know. He doesn't work. I mean, he still has some amount of stock, but he's not the largest stockholder. Like, this guy is just sitting in some, I assume, very gaudy mansion somewhere ordering Papa John's pizzas to take a bite to be like, nope, not good.
Just
not like it was when I was
eating
there.
It. And like, of course, it's not going to taste as good to you. You're choking on your own bile. Yeah, for some reason, they're putting a lot of bile in all of these pizzas. Now, yeah, because you're ordering them and eating them out of anger. I mean, that is like the saddest. It's just like if you thought seeing who was it who was drunkenly eating
David Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff, yeah, drunkenly eating his hamburger. Like, that is what I always picture whenever I'm, like, really sad eating or drunk eating. I'm just like, oh, I'm Hasselhoffing this. Now I'm going to think of Papa John just, like, just ragefully eating a pizza a day. Well, I guess a pizza and a quarter a day or however you get to that 30 pizzas in 40
days. What the math on that is. Yeah. But, Andrew, what if I told you that he was by himself inside a huge mansion with everything covered in marble for some reason, sitting in a hot tub with a giant mountain of cocaine next to himself, trying to call various sugar babies that he keeps on, none of which are returning. What if I painted that picture? Would you think he was a loser then?
No, of course not. Yeah. Say hello to my little pizza.
We're left with a bad taste in their mouths.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days. And it's not the same pizza. It's not the same product. It just doesn't taste as good. The way they're making the pizza, the way they're putting the pizza together is just not fundamentally sound to what...
You guys, there are some fundamental principles of pizza making. And you are violating those fundamental principles.
Well,
right
what
now.
They're doing, I don't know, have you ordered a pizza recently? They're putting the sauce and the cheese on the bottom of the pizzas, which I do think, again, this is what happens when you put a roast beef man in charge of a pizza company, and it's just fundamentally unsound.
Yeah. I mean, that's the clinical definition of insanity, is putting a roast beef man in charge of a pizza company and expecting to get a different outcome.
That's right.
Any brain doctor will tell you that.
What makes a Papa John's pizza a Papa John's pizza?
If you were to walk back in as CEO, what do you think the employees would say?
If the management team was out and I went back in, they'd be cheering. They'd be doing backflips. They'd be bouncing off the walls.
Debatable. I mean, I can't say. I mean, it's possible. I don't think anyone has ever said backflips that way. But, you know, I don't know if we should be the ones criticizing people's verbal abilities.
Yeah, certainly
but,
not me.
He is under the impression that if he were to go back to the company – everybody would be very, very stoked.
Sure, they'd be doing backflips. They'd be bouncing off the walls.
Now is a papa without a pizza empire.
Yep.
He says he's committed to giving.
Like, I just love that at the end of this story, which again, I edited down, the original's like 4 or 5 minutes. This TV reporter was like, I got one more in me. A papa without a pizza empire. Like, that's going to bring it home. And so he does.
He's back. He recently made big donations to
Simmons. And that's the other thing. He's been – Papa John's has now been donating to – like I think he donated to a historically black university and he donated to the high school he went to. So he's trying to make amends or whatever. So I mean, again, I don't know what goes on inside the guy's heart and brain, but I just love that idea of him ordering – 40 pizzas in 30 days.
Yeah.
Or was it 30 pizzas in 40 days? No, I think it was 40 in 30 days.
Because there's more
like
pizzas than days.
And as you said, some of those days, it was two pizzas. Like, what was that journey like?
Right.
Did and you also, get what if you're the stores? Kid? What if you're the kid delivering to Papa John's mansion? Like, you get another call up. It's another delivery out on, Willow Lane in that, gated community, and on that man-made lake, and you like you drive it back out there, and you're just like, and Papa John just comes to the door in a, like a Papa John's robe,
yeah,
which has like, and then it's like, you know, you look in the house and there's like a life-size Peyton Manning cutout from some promotional thing he did in Des Moines.
And for a second, you can tell it's been punched. It's got yeah. like during just one rage session, he just lost.
There's a picture
it,
of like
went to town.
There's a dartboard with Brad Paisley's face on it, just full of darts. Peyton Manning's new TV commercial buddy. Those nationwide commercials are honestly good, though, right?
No,
don't. I mean,
wait, hold on.
Where Peyton Manning is, it wants to be in Brad Paisley's band.
Oh, I thought they were charming at first. Like, not unlike.
You're over them?
Yeah, I'm a little over them. I find them kind of cringy these days. But that's just probably a taste
really?
Thing. I don't have like a rant about them. I just feel like they kind of, to use an overused expression, kind of jump the shark a little bit. They don't make me laugh. They just make me cringe.
I think I'm struck by how good Peyton Manning's comedic timing
uh-huh,
is.
Uh-huh. I'd like to see him
and
in
so,
something substantial.
But this is interesting because this, I think, this points out why I'm even though I think that they're a mess, I'm less put off by the State Farm commercials because of the performance
mm-hmm.
of the guy who plays the agent. And by the way, the other day I saw the joke that you said Genevieve made or the observation about his outfit. When he gets kicked out of the car
yeah, uh-huh.
after he plays Breaking the Law, that's the moment when you really see his slightly too small suit
yeah.
in full glory. It is totally
yeah.
hilarious.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think I go – like I'll basically put up with a commercial or a series of commercials longer if I like the performance
mm-hmm.
of somebody in the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see a Peyton Manning thing, one of those nationwide ones, him just being like, you know, I ordered bongos online for our band. Like it somehow makes that's not even a thing he says, but it somehow just makes me laugh because his or at least it charms me slightly because his delivery is just better than any other pro athlete trying to be funny that
yeah.
I can think of.
Yes, absolutely. As far you know, Veeves and I did a show a long time ago, years ago now, where we gave a letter grade. I think a letter grade, not a ranking, for every football player as far as how well they can act in commercials. I think we limited it to football. It might have been all athletes, but he definitely ranks high. I mean, he's got to be the best, like you say. I can't think of another player who has more kind of comedic chops and actually acting skills than him.
Yeah, he's really good at that. I mean, he's been on SNL a bunch of times, and I would say those are pretty funny. But these nationwide ones are better because. Because it's just like they can, I don't know, it's a controlled environment. They can, it's a little more subtle. And I think it, you know, again, I'm impressed. We'll see what Eli Manning's skills are when he finally stops. Actually, I guess he did finally stop. I guess he's no longer,
yeah.
he's no longer the quarterback. So he has a little more time now.
Well, nobody will be able to beat Andrew Luck's comedic timing, I'm sure. So I'm looking forward to his spate of advertisements.
Oh, Andrew Luck.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
I feel like Andrew Luck and I would be friends off the field. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he... Oh, man, I'm actually a very big Andrew Luck fan, just as a person. Like, I think... Well, first of all, I thought he did a really brave thing this year, stepping away mm-hmm. from football, just because, you know, like... I don't know. I just think it's really hard to do. And the idea that anyone would flip him shit over that, it's like, go get your head bashed in for however many seasons. Mm-hmm. And So I kind of respected that move from him. I think that there's – it's must be very hard to not be totally defined by the idea of being a football player. And if you still have some football left in you, to just be like, I'm ready for the part of my life that is totally unknown to me to start now.
Mm-hmm.
That impressed me a little bit. He also just seems like a bright guy. He went to Stanford. He does sometimes look like a Geico caveman to me, but that's beside the point.
I know. I don't like to make fun of people's looks, but I mean, that's essentially like, I don't know much about Andrew Luck, and I feel like that joke I just made was based on, he doesn't look like a funny man. He does look like a troll who might live under
he
a
looks
bridge.
Like an Amish caveman.
Asking people to answer riddles before they can cross. But, you know, aside from that, he doesn't seem super funny, but maybe he's quicker than I give him credit for. Don't judge a book by its bad beard.
I don't know anything about his sense of humor. Yeah, I do find that beard to be unfortunate. I don't think it's doing him any favors. He looks like Mose, Dwight Schrute's brother
yes,
from
does.
The Office.
He totally does.
Okay. Now, on to the emails. Are there any emails? Hey, let me just start by saying real quick, I got an email this morning from listener Alan, who is dealing with some medical stuff and is going to be in the hospital this week, and he mentioned something in this email. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, well, at least I got the podcast to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alan, we're thinking of you, buddy. And as I said in my response email, we're going to podcast as hard as we can
yes.
to try to create some good content. This hasn't been the day for that, but I promise you, in the next two shows, we'll really try and make a really good show for you.
And I don't know if you saw the update on that. He went in – he sent us that email over the weekend, and he went in yesterday for the actual surgery for something that's quite serious. Alan – I think a lot of listeners might know Alan. He asked a question during the boat show. So if you're on the boat, you might have seen him or heard him in the podcast. I can't remember what the question was. It was something directed specifically at you, Luke, so I blanked it out. He did write back and say that the procedure is over now. It was late afternoon, and he got out of surgery late last night, and he said that he slept well, and he woke up feeling okay, but now comes the recovery part where he's going to be in that bed for the rest of the week, missing Thanksgiving, and it sounds like it'll probably be, my guess is, not the easiest recovery. So, we are thinking of Alan and rooting for him, and there is a lot of pressure on us to make these shows better than usual. So once again, we are the ones who are shouldering everything. Why does everything happen to us?
That's as I said to Alan, could be worse. You could be eating a bunch of fake turkey products.
Yeah, right.
Which I hope he took in the spirit it was intended.
Yeah, but yeah, for real. We're thinking of you, Alan. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Any other emails or messages or V-mails?
Yeah,
or Slacks.
I got a couple of things
you would
I'd like
to talk
do.
About.
Yeah. So really quickly, speaking of puns, you were talking about how like producers like to put puns in things. Did you know, by the way, that like I never put puns in the TBTL newsletter? That's all Christina. Like, she's always insisting that like, no, more puns. And she'll just put that stuff in there. My newsletter, when I write the first draft, they're pretty straightforward. Like, I'm not trying to goof around here. I'm trying to cover the issues that the listeners care about, and that's all. It's all producer Christina adding that stuff in there. And so the last newsletter, we put together a list of doggy daycare names for specifically patriotic pets. And Karen says,
"That was so good, dude."
Well, again, it was pretty straightforward when I had it. It was Christina who added all the puns. Karen says, "In Palm Springs, we have a doggy daycare."
You realize how much you screwed yourself over with that with that line of description about the, because you were like, Christina puts all the puns in, and then I was like, those puns are awesome, and you're like, yeah. Now I can't get credit.
In Palm Springs, we have a doggy daycare / vet clinic called Barkingham Palace. It always makes me smile when I drive by. I like that. That's good. I mean, it's a different kind of patriotism, clearly, but I am definitely into that. And then the other thing I wanted to do is I realized I have not checked the voicemail in a couple of weeks, which is something I really need to do, and maybe we can do a voicemail frenzy. I love doing voicemail frenzies, but how would you feel about playing a little voicemail roulette right here, where I just pick one of these at random. Now, one thing that I will do is I'll game the system a little bit here. Like, I see a couple where somebody called in and left two messages in a row. That's usually a bad sign. It means they bailed on their first one, or they couldn't get it all into their first one. So I'm not going to choose one of those. How about this one from November 11th? from the 207 area code. I don't know where that is.
I want to play my – I'm very excited. I have this wheel sound effect, but I can't find it on this. Maybe it just lives on my other computer, so okay.
Oh, wait, no.
Everybody just
okay. – Yeah, okay.
Everybody imagine the spinning of the of that tote wheel, and then it goes click, 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 and then we play the voicemail.
Yeah, I'm actually going to bail on that one because there's two in a row on that. So I'm going to play this one from the 724. This is about a minute long. Let's see if this is the last time we play. I'm always so nervous. We've lucked out. They've always been good, but I don't want to get a clunker here. Let's take a listen.
Hi, guys. I don't know if this is better for the no point or regular, but I have to tell you that, Andrew, as I watched the Seahawks game, I was thinking of you the entire time because I kept hearing them talk about Garofalo. You mean Garofalo, the quarterback for the 49ers. And I was just really confused about, I knew that it couldn't be the famous actress and Andrew's one-time crush, but I was sure that that's what I was hearing. It wasn't until after the game that I looked up the real name. And somehow I had missed seeing it on the back of the jersey, that it was not Garofalo. It is really close. Anyways, this is listener Rachel from Pittsburgh, but one time from Seattle. So just thought of you in five calls. Bye.
Hey, all right, Rachel. Good. Thank you for keeping the segment alive. That was a good voicemail. It was Jeanine Garofalo playing. She changes her name to Garofalo. Yes. I believe the other – I can't – who were they playing? Because the other quarterback was David Cross, I believe, right?
It was actually Uma Thurman. And then there was an unruly dog that was playing right guard. This was really everybody from that poster.
Yeah. The truth about – catches and runs. Oh.
Christina will punch that up later.
Yeah. Christina, help!
When's the last time you saw that movie? Pun.
I have not seen that movie probably since it came out and I had that poster. I think Genevieve might have had it on as I was walking through the room in the past month or two, but I didn't sit down to watch it. I assume it doesn't hold up at all. I remember at the time just, I was so in love with Jeanine Garofalo and Jimmy Garoppolo, by the way. I also had a huge crush on him. I had such a crush on her. I remember at the time being so angry at that movie because they treated Jeanine Garofalo like she was like the second choice. I was like, anybody?
Jimmy Garoppolo with the Patriots for his first four seasons.
Right, and I was like, how could anybody think of her as the second tier ingenue in this? She was obviously she is the more desirable of the two main leads, although she's played to be like the dumpier one. And so I was always mad at that premise, having her steal a piece of my heart as she did. So that's
she was a real Bridget type.
Yeah, I can't believe you remember that. All those things you're going to remember. Of course, you remember everything.
Oh,
so.
Andrew, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying
No, that's fine.
I'm not trying to make you. I honestly was thinking about that show. This was the Friday show where you and I started talking about kind of like, you know, writing projects we did in college or whatever. And I stand by my theory that I bet you anything that essay or that story, rather, that you wrote is not nearly as cringeworthy as it feels in your mind.
God.
That being said, if it makes you have a bad feeling, I don't want to bring
No. That was fine. That's all fair game. But I was thinking like, boy, you know what? I don't think I would have any access to that story anymore to prove me right or wrong, because it was probably on some, you know, floppy drive that I don't have access
Power
to
glove.
Anymore, which I do have all my old floppies from college, but I don't have a way to read them. But I'm looking at the suitcase across the room that's mocking me right now, where I'm sure I have a printout of that thing, because that's where I put all of my writing stuff. But I won't crack that. No.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Luke. Off limits.
Don't leave me alone in your house, because I wouldn't.
Thing.
I only because I know, and this is seriously something that I think I have a better friend or a person who's better at seeing other people would have learned this much earlier in our relationship. But I think for a long time I thought that you were. I didn't understand just how real this stuff hits you and just how much it can actually ruin your day. So there would have been a time in our relationship where it would have been funny to me to, like, someday when I'm at your house unsupervised, like, snatch that out of the suitcase
and then like bring it up on the show or read it or something. I would never do that because I know that it would honestly
it would be
damaging to you in a way that's not funny. That would be like bad for you.
Yeah.
But see, I only realize that now, like within like year two of our friendship. Which is too late in the friendship for me to not understand this about you.
Well, you've never done well. This is a fantasy you're making up, though. I can't recall any analogies to the type of thing that you're talking about now, where you would even whether I was on the show or not, where you would have done a bit at my expense. And also in this, I also believe that you truly believe it's not as bad as I think it is. So I think you'd be
sure.
If you were to follow through in this, you would be doing it more out of the. More out of the desire to prove me wrong of my lack
yes,
of self-confidence.
Yes, I would. And that would be where it would be coming from. But what I would have not thought about years ago, but what I would think about now is like, that's me trying to prove my point, but I'm rolling the dice with your experience.
Yeah, right.
And how hard it would be for you. And so therefore, not worth it, not a funny prank.
Mm-hmm.
But there would have been a time that I would have been like, oh, this will be great. Because then... The outcome will be you'll realize it wasn't that bad, and then you'll be like, God, thank God, Luke is such a great friend for helping me understand this.
Now,
I no longer view
now
the world that way.
A famous writer, and I'm going to dedicate my first book to Luke.
That's all I ask.
That's all you ask. All right.
Okay.
Well, good. That was a fun voicemail roulette. Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah, good job, Rachel. Thanks for keeping the bit going. So I guess the thing is we keep doing that until we get – a terrible voicemail, and then we stop with voicemail roulette.
Yeah, but then the thing is, then I will have to struggle with like, when we get to the bad voicemail, will I admit on the air what a terrible voicemail it is and make that listener feel bad? Because I'm not in the game of doing that, right? So
right.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't see
I
any
mean,
good coming
just...
of this.
Yeah, you're right. Because we'll have to just pretend like it's a fine voicemail, but then people will know. What'll happen is if you don't hear voicemail roulette for 8 months, go back to the last voicemail we played.
We'll just be like, cool, 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 cool.
KK.
KK. Christina, by the way, she and I have been emailing back and forth about some things, or slacking, I guess. And now it's like every sign-off is tortured. She's like, okay. I mean, KK, and I'm like, Roger that.
Love
like,
it.
We don't know how to get out of our spiral. Are we being sincere or not? By the way, speaking of that, I am thinking there might not be a newsletter this week because of the holiday week. I'll see if I can conjure something up in the next 2 days. But we got a lot on our plate, so to speak.
Yeah.
So So if you don't see one this week, don't fret. Maybe there will be one the following.
All right. I think that this is a completely appropriate week to hit pause on the newsletter just because, like you said, of the holidays and all of that. So that is going to do it for this Tuesday episode of the show. But here's the good news. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more of This Imaginary Radio for you. So please tune in for that. And we'll see you then. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Go Mariners. Go Seahawks. Go Browns. Go eat a bagel. Go eat a tofurkey. Purely for research purposes. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.